The problem that I see right now is the politicians are not checking the vax. I've yet to meet a single politician who had any of the vax. So I talked to a senator who didn't know that plastics are scientifically proven to have reduced waste to landfill because 1 pound of plastic replaces 3 or 4 pounds of paper, metal, or glass on average.
Welcome to Building Connections, presented by IPEX. In each episode, we delve into the world of construction, exploring how key leaders in the space shape the infrastructures of tomorrow. Discover the stories behind the solutions that impact municipal, commercial, and residential projects across North America.
Welcome to Building Connections. This is the podcast where we explore innovation, sustainability, and the trends shaping the future of construction and infrastructure. I'm your host, Greg Blackett, and today we have an incredible guest, Dr. Chris Diarmait. Dr. Diarmait is recognized as one of the world's leading plastic material scientists and problem solvers. He's sought out by top companies like Apple, HP, Exxon, and Disney. He's also the author of a thought-provoking book called The Plastic Paradox, which challenges many of the common perceptions about plastic today. And we highly encourage everyone to get a copy, which we'll talk about at the end. Look, we're going to dive into Chris's insights on plastic and sustainability. Dr. Diarmait, thanks so much for joining us. It really is an honor to have you here.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Great. So, Chris, look, I'm really curious on your background. Can you just walk us through your background? How did you get into the plastics industry? And what really sparked your passion for this?
Yeah. So I was studying chemistry at Sussex University in the UK, and a professor, there was a certain time in your career when you have to, or your undergraduate studies, where you have to pick a minor. That could be economics. You could be doing chemistry with economics, chemistry with French. And this professor, Norman Billingham, who's a legendary in polymer degradation, he came up with a bottle of 2 liter bottle of cider and said, let me explain to you why you should study chemistry with polymer science. And he had the free alcohol. So what was I to do but listen to him? And basically said that the areas such that all the people who really understand plastics are either dying or retiring because the industry started at a certain point and those people are now at a certain age where the people who really understand plastic materials on a scientific level are no longer with us. And so he predicted there would be a huge vacuum just as I was graduating. And that turned out to be very prescient. That was a wonderful beverage that I had with Professor Billingham. And he's the one who really mentored me and made me fascinated with the area.
That's a fantastic story. And when I first met you a couple of years ago and read your book, I was really fascinated with how I started thinking about plastic after that meeting and after you reading that book. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. Before reading your book and meeting you, I was inundated with a lot of different information on plastic as it impacts our health, as it impacts the environment. And I really didn't really understand how to think about it. Can you walk us through your perspective on how individuals should think about plastic in our daily lives?
Interesting. So first, let me tell you my perspective and why I'm even involved in this. My job as a scientist is to make better materials. That's where my income comes from. And as having read the book, the only reason I'm talking about plastics and the environment is as a hobby. I've spent 4,000 hours reading 4,000 scientific studies unpaid because my own daughters were told lies at school, and that made me angry. And you have to be very angry or annoyed about something to write a book because it's so much work. I'm not here paid. I'm here just spreading the science because as a problem solver, which is my job, I know that you can't really solve problems if you start off with bad information. And so the number one thing is not to think about pro-plastic, anti-plastic, all of that stuff. The first thing to say is, where is the evidence? What do the scientific studies tell us? Many people assume that because plastic is a relatively new field, the studies are not done. For example, we don't know about microplastic. And it's quite the reverse. There are 30 life cycle studies on plastic bags. I've read 400 studies on microplastic spanning 50 years. So it turns out that we have all the scientific data to make good decisions, but nobody's actually reading it because there's too much money to be made spreading misinformation. To go back to your original question, if you were to ask me in a nutshell what to think about plastics, I would say that they're 0.5% of, so 0.5% of all the materials we use. And according to life cycle studies, they're usually the least impactful option. Replacing them on average creates 3 to 4 times more waste. three times more greenhouse gas and two times more fossil fuel is used. And that's what science tells us. That's irrefutable. These are studies all around the world spanning decades, which all agree with each other. So if we were to worry about using too much materials, we certainly would not be obsessing all day about 0.5% of the materials we use and completely not talking about the other 99%. And that's exactly what we're doing today. We're creating laws and regulations and bans and taxes on something which, at the end of the day, is insignificant compared to our larger problems.
Yeah. Okay. And it's interesting, you touched upon a life cycle assessment, and that's certainly something that you talk a lot about. Talk to us a little bit about that, because that was something new I learned from you as well. And that's my understanding, a framework to understand how alternative materials can compare to each other. Is that the right way to look at different materials, and how do they work, and are they accurate? Is that an accurate way of looking at materials?
Yeah, great question. So I was introduced to it by a friend called Bengt Mattsson in Sweden many years ago. We were having a party and he mentioned this life cycle analysis. I'd never heard of it before. So I said, what's that? And basically it's the only validated scientific way to know what causes more or less harm. It's accepted by NGOs and governments and companies. It's the only tool we have really that works. And it's been honed over decades. They have to do it according to certain standards. So it's difficult to cheat. And then even at the end, you have to have external experts come in and analyze what you've done just so you can't pull a fast one. So it is the only tool we have. And there is no, let me put it this way, good and bad is relative, right? So if you say plastics are bad, you have to say relative to what? What if plastics create impact, which they do, but then replacing them, as we just heard, creates far more waste than greenhouse gas and fossil fuel? So we should be, as a scientist, I'm a logical guy, right? I don't work on emotion. I say, hey, I'm going to create some impact. Let me pick the alternative that creates least impact. And life cycle analysis is the only way we know how to do that. People do criticize it. A, they say that it only includes greenhouse gas, which is untrue. There are many factors. There's effect on water, effect on animals. There's toxins. There's fossil fuel usage. There's waste creation. There's many things in it. And you add up basically all of these different factors and work out what causes more or less harm. And when you do that for bags, as mentioned, there are 30 studies in the world on grocery bags, and everyone ever done says plastic bags cause least harm. So it makes little sense to ban or tax the option, which is proven without doubt to reduce harm compared to the other things. In fact, the irony is a Swedish guy invented the plastic bag to save trees because he was in Sweden where you have nothing but trees and forestry, and he wanted to save the forests. That's the irony. We've taken something which saves trees, saves the environment, and now decided to ban it and make things worse.
Yeah, it certainly can relate. Where I live, they ban plastic bags. And now what you hear in the news is people are accumulating the replacement product, the bags made from recycled material and other products. And now the question is, we're drowning in the alternative. What do we do with the bags we have? So I don't know if we've created another problem in the process. What are your thoughts on those, the replacement bags that they're using versus what we were using before?
Yeah, that's interesting. So they've actually done a study where they banned in New Jersey the bag, and then they did an analysis to say, hey, what happened after the ban? What was the effect? And the effect was selling way more plastics because they replaced these incredibly thin grocery bags that you can see through, which you use again as a trash can liner. And now those people had to either buy a very thick reusable bag. And when it comes to the trash can liners, they had to go and buy real trash can liners, which are five times thicker than a grocery bag is. So the net result of these plastic bag bans is increased cost to the customer and vastly more plastic sales. And in their words of the study, exponentially more greenhouse gas. Yeah. And this is funny because it's not funny because you could have predicted this by the 30 studies I just mentioned. So why? And you can literally find them yourself. If you were to type in LCA bag into Google right now, you'll find these PDFs, right? They're available to a regular person in 1 second. So it baffles me that no politician or government, non-government organization, it's never occurred to them in the last 20 years to type LCA bag into Google and check the facts before they make these policy decisions and recommendations.
Yeah, it's certainly needed. And even as a consumer of a wide variety of products, I see a lot of advertising in our space around this product is more environmentally friendly or this is eco-friendly. And I'm really not sure if it is. And the reason why I can say that now is after having learned about Lego, for example, I think you actually mentioned this on your website or on LinkedIn. Yeah. So Tell us about the Lego experience. I thought that was really interesting and in how they came to the conclusion that maybe recycled wasn't the right option for them.
Yeah, so they've spent a huge amount of money on sustainability. It's a really great company, a really good people. I really enjoyed working with them for years. And so they tried all kinds of things like PLA and PHB and every polymer you can think of, because they have almost unlimited resources like these big companies do. And even after years of trying, they couldn't find anything that really worked for Lego bricks, because Lego bricks are extremely fine tolerances. They have to work for decades. And they work out being pretty green because you pass them down to future generations. So after all these trials, they decided to make them out of PET. Recycled PET bottles would be a good choice. And they had to do a lot of tweaks to make it get as close as they could. And in the end of the day, they said, okay, we've done the studies and this is actually going to increase impact compared to the ABS we use now. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to go ahead. So they made the bricks, they made it work. They were demoing them to people and all of that. But they did the honest thing and said, okay, this is not, it's a great publicity stunt to do something like that. And we've spent a lot of money on it. But they actually said, honestly, this is going to increase harm, partly because you have to, when you mold plastics, you need these molds, of course, to put the melted plastic into. All of those would have to be replaced with new molds, which is a vast amount of money and a vast amount of environmental impact, because these things are made of metal. And also PET plastic, you have to dry it, which means a lot of energy and a lot of hot air all the time. So you end up having these hidden things, which mean that it's not as green as you were hoping it would have been. And when they said that they weren't going to use the PET recycled, there was a huge sigh of relief in the industry, because people actually need that recycled PET for bottles and other things, for making fleeces and bottles. So it would have created a horrible problem and not having enough recycled PET available for all the other industries had they gone ahead anyway.
Interesting. And you touched upon government and regulation. And I'm also interested in, are they involved in regulating messaging, and or are they getting involved in making sure that as a consumer, if we're buying a sustainable product, it's in fact sustainable, like an LCA was done, and that as a consumer, we can trust that product is maybe better than an alternative? Or are we still early days there?
The problem that I see right now is the politicians are not checking the facts. I've yet to meet a single politician who had any of the facts. So I talked to a senator who didn't know that plastics are scientifically proven to have reduced waste to landfill. Because 1 pound of plastic replaces 3 or 4 pounds of paper, metal, or glass on average. Hmm. So that's scientifically proven, peer-reviewed. So the politicians have none of the facts, and the facts that the so-called facts that they're getting are coming from companies like Greenpeace and the World Wildlife Fund and Ellen MacArthur. And the president of Greenpeace literally left in disgust and published 2 books saying that they just tell lies for money. That's their business strategy, according to their own former president. So the trouble is, you have to follow the money and say, and that's why I'm doing my work unpaid. That's why I read thousands of studies unpaid, because the people on the other side are making hundreds of millions by just telling whoppers for donations. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. These are the people in front of our politicians who are swaying policy and making policies which are scientifically proven to make things worse. And not only do they make things worse, but they increase cost to the customer. So where people with a good heart are paying more to make things worse because they've got bad advice.
But what about the recent, and maybe some of them aren't recent, but more the medical industries? I've read in the last maybe 6 months, a couple of new health-related studies related to microplastics and accumulation, but I really can't discern the results or how it was conducted. Any thoughts on some of those studies? Should we be worried?
Yeah, I was worried about that, actually. When I first started reading, I thought, what am I going to find here? So far, I've read 400 studies on microplastics over 50 years, and I've seen no evidence to suggest any reason for concern. And the reason I say that is that there's a couple of key factors. It's probably the worst science I've ever seen in that area. They're literally doing complete nonsense. And that sounds like a harsh thing to say about other scientists. But don't forget that the reward for publishing things which are scary is way more money thrown at you and fame. Right. So if you look at the scientific studies, which other scientists have done, they've come into this area and they've said, OK, what's the quality of science in this microplastics area? And their conclusion was that 90% of the studies are not valid because they're just horribly bad science. And let me give you examples. For example, here's an analogy. Imagine you wanted to know whether kittens were dangerous. You would do studies on kittens, but that's not what they're doing. They're doing their studies on lions instead of kittens. And so here's what I really mean by that, is that the actual plastics we're exposed to are polyethylene, polypropylene, and PET and PVC, right? We know that they're safe. You can drink out of them. They're FDA approved. No problem at all. But what plastics are they doing these microplastic studies on? And the answer is a special type of polystyrene bead that's fluorescent and made in the lab, and nobody in the world's ever been exposed to it. So they're picking a kind of plastic which is not at all the same as what we're exposed to, not at all realistic. It's complete nonsense. That makes the study invalid. So about 90% of studies are invalid because they're using the wrong plastic. And the other thing they're doing is they're using a million times more of it than is actually in the environment, which is complete nonsense. If you breathe 20% oxygen, you have a great life. If you breathe 100% oxygen, which is only five times more, you die. You feel great and then you die. So this concentration thing is very important. Any study that uses a million times too high a concentration to on purpose give a bad result is completely incompetent. And these people should be, if it was up to me, I'd throw them off the planet. That's how bad. I'd make them pay back the research money that they wasted from our tax dollars out of their own money if it was up to me, because this science is, I don't even have words for it. It's awful. Yeah. So if you throw away the bad science and you look at the valid studies, and what do I mean by that? Am I cherry picking here? And the answer is no. You pick studies which are done on polyethylene and polypropylene and PET at proper concentrations. And what you find when you look at those studies is that plastic is 0.01% of particles that we ingest. So there's dust everywhere, right? We're always exposed to particles and our body's used to that. It's 0.01% and it's as safe as clay or cellulose, which is what plants are made of. So that's what the valid studies say. But of course, you can't get notoriety and funding for saying that they're safe. So people say the opposite. And sorry for this is a lengthy answer, but it's an important topic. The other thing that scientists have studied is they've compared what do scientists say to what are the media telling the public. The media, 93% of media articles are telling the public that microplastic is a proven threat, and only about 20% of the scientific studies say that. So it's been scientifically proven that the media has lied to us, grossly misrepresented the science.
Yeah, and that's my concern is certainly before reading your book, I really felt that way personally and even within my home and my family, that our decisions we were making and even how that applies to the building and construction industry around the materials we use. Infrastructure is supported by plastics today, PVC plastic, polyethylene, ABS, you've mentioned a few. And so there can be concern. If I were an engineer, or maybe if you're an engineer specifying a material type within on a project, whether it's an infrastructure project for water or electricity or an energy project, how should the engineer think about choice when it comes to materials? Was it based on regulation? Is it based on the LCA? What we want to do is we want to think about the right choice to make. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So that is my area, right? I've worked for Electrolux, Frigidaire, and BASF, and some of the world's biggest companies. And that's exactly the job that I do on the day-to-day basis. People say, what kind of material would be ideal for this? It might be plastic, it might be something else. And the answer is, you start with the cheapest material. You say, okay, can this be done with polyethylene? Can it be done with polypropylene? Can it be done with something that's very cheap? Because that's the way the real world works, right? Nobody wants to pay extra for something if they don't have to. And then you say to yourself, so the cheapest material that will fulfill all the requirements is usually the best option, unless you're going for a luxury product. And the funny thing is, when you then check the life cycle studies, you find out that nearly every time that cheapest material is also the greenest. And here's the funny thing that I found, that if you plot greenhouse gas needed to make a material on the y-axis and then cost on the x-axis, you get a straight line. So what you find out is that you create 27,000 kilos of CO2 to make 1 kilogram of gold. It's horrible for the environment and incredibly expensive for the same reasons that it's horrible for the environment. It takes so much energy to make it and there's so much waste and transportation and so forth. The things on the other end of that curve are things like polyethylene, polypropylene, PVC, PET. Those materials are very cheap for the same reasons that they're very green. There's not much material used to make them, not much energy needed to make them, not much transportation because they're light and so forth. So this is the irony at the moment. People with good hearts are spending more money to increase harm when all they would have to do to decrease harm, if let's say you're in the supermarket, you're not sure what to buy. If you buy the cheapest solution, you'll be doing your family a favor, but also the environment a favor, because that's usually the greenest one too.
Building Connections is brought to you by IPEX, leaders in thermoplastic piping systems, where innovation meets reliability. Elevate your infrastructure projects with our comprehensive range of products designed for durability and efficiency. Visit ipexna.com to discover how our solutions can enhance your next project today.
In our industry, using the LCA framework is incredibly helpful for us as an education tool. But back to regulation for a moment. You were in Ottawa recently. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. I think it was a UN committee around plastic pollution.
Yeah.
And I was read it on the peripheral, but I wasn't involved. What went on there and what was the outcome?
Yeah. They keep having these meetings where they fly in thousands and thousands of people and all these green groups show up in their Escalades and fancy cars. And I tried to talk to them and they were not interested in facts. I walked up to some people from the World Wildlife Fund and they were not even interested in a discussion based on evidence. They're making a huge amount of money and driving around in fancy cars and feeling important and looking virtuous. And here's the irony of it. I calculated the environmental impact of my flights to go into that visit, which I paid for out of my own money. Nobody paid for me to be there. And the impact of those flights was the same as 10,000 PET bottles. That's more than I'll use in my whole lifetime. And the irony is that this emergency meeting that they called, and this is that was the fourth one. They're having a fifth one in South Korea, is based on complete nonsense. It's fictional. They've created a fictional emergency. And here's what I mean by that. They're saying that the oceans are choking in plastic and we have to do something. When you actually measure what's in the ocean, which they do, we have 50 years of data on that. They go out with nets, they collect everything, and then they measure it. And what they find is they found about 3 tons of material in this given sample, 6,000 items. They found 0 bags, 1 straw, and a couple of PET bottles, right? The total weight was 0.03% of what they found in the ocean, the solids that they found floating. And what was the other 99%? Fishing nets. And fishing nets are proven to harm whales and turtles and so for birds, right? Those are the scientifically proven cause of harm and over 99%. And what is this Inc. 5 and Inc. 4? What are they planning to do? Their plan, according to their own documents, is to completely ignore the 99% of the fishing nets, which cause harm, and instead regulate things like bags, which there were zero of, and straws and bottles, which are completely insignificant. So not to say that there's zero evidence, zero harm from them, but any treaty that flies 10,000 people around the world 5 times to talk about an emergency and then to fail to act on the 99 point whatever percent is total insanity. And yet that's the living these people are making out of these false emergencies.
It's disappointing to hear that. And a lot of it stems, I think, from just the lack of awareness and knowledge, and people are making decisions and acting on the lack of scientific understanding and reality.
Yeah.
How do we change that? What do you think the next steps are so we can, bringing it back to the Lego example, you had someone that said, okay, look, we're going to do more harm than good. So we don't want to do that. And they followed the right path, right? The right thing to do for the environment. Is it more regulation? Is it more education? What do you think we need to do to make sure that these pointless meetings can stop?
Yeah. I can tell you what's happening right now is that customers think that paper is greener and glass and metal. And so they're shifting to things that are much, much worse and cost more. And so Google announced that they're going to shift to paper, even though every life cycle study says it's going in the wrong direction. Amazon announced the same thing. Lego announced that they're going to paper bags, even though every scientific study, which they have seen because I showed them the studies myself, they know the studies. But the trouble is, if you lie to the customer and the customer is the voter and the customer is the one with the money, then companies are forced to do what the customer wants. And that's the danger of misinformation. So we do have all the data. The good news is all the science has been done. It's irrefutable. It's solid. It's 50 years of studies on all of these topics. And the frustrating part for me as an unfunded guy, I'm sitting here in my living room in my spare time talking to you, right? This is not. And so what can I do? What can I do as a single person? All I can do is put the data out there. And so some companies are getting frustrated now because their trade associations who should have stepped up haven't done anything for the last 5 or 10 years. So one company is sending 535 signed copies of my book to every member of Congress. Another company is doing that for the Canadian government. Another organization is looking at doing that for the British Parliament. I've been asked to testify for the government in Saudi Arabia and in Dubai and so forth, because some of the governments in some parts of the world are trying not to make the mistakes we're making here. Here we make knee-jerk reactions and bans which are proven to make things worse and taxes which just make things worse by driving people to worse options. And they don't want to make the same mistakes we've made in our countries. They want to see the science first and then make policies that actually work. What I'd like to see on a personal level is full page adverts in the New York Times. I want somebody to step up, show people the science, not to promote plastics, to promote the truth. My book is available in 5 languages. So that's, I'm not here trying to sell a book, which is what people assume. And the other thing I'd like to see is the green groups exposed, because they're just telling lies for money in many cases. So I'd like to see them sued and exposed as charlatans. And you can read the books by Patrick Moore, the former president of Greenpeace, and see what I'm talking about. He has very compelling evidence there. That's what we need to do. We need to get the facts out. We have the facts, but we need to do a much more proactive job of getting them in front of people.
Yeah. And that's not an easy task, but I think your book and your research really helps form a foundation of that. And so look, Chris, I would just want to appreciate you for coming on and sharing the stories and spreading the word. I think it's critical. Is there any specific comments you want to give based on how do we find your book or where we can download it?
Yeah, you can find it at phantomplastics.com. You just click the flag of the language that you want it in. And I would like to make one building-related example, because that's what your channel's about. So I looked at life cycle studies of pipes, right? And it turns out that plastic pipes are greenest according to all life cycle studies. So I found 14 life cycle studies, and pipes are unequivocally cheaper, greener, and safer made of plastic. And what are we being told online? There's a group called Beyond Plastics, which is funded by Michael Bloomberg to say negative things about plastics, right? Not to protect the environment, to say negative things about plastics. So he spent millions of dollars promoting this group, which just, when you analyze what they say, it's just nonsense. And this is a danger, right? And the reason, ironically, the reason he did that is he thinks that plastics is part of the big oil, right? He thinks he's against oil, a big oil and fossil fuel. And he thinks plastic is part of that, when in fact, plastic is proven to scientifically proven to reduce fossil fuel consumption. So this billionaire has spent hundreds of millions or tens of millions of his own money to campaign against his own beliefs. And this is how crazy the world is. People are throwing money around campaigning, lobbying for things that just don't make sense. When it comes to building and construction, I think that's a specific example of why we should stick to the safest, cheapest, greenest option.
No, that's great. And do you think that study is getting any traction in Congress in terms of banning plastics or PVC for infrastructure? Or do you think that was a one-off and it's going to die down?
The funny thing is, everyone keeps saying that they're going to get me in front of Congress. All these trade organizations offer it, big companies offer it, and not one of them has followed through. So at the moment, we have completely ineffectual plastic trade associations. Most of them are completely ineffectual and don't have the facts. I've spoken to them myself. They say ridiculous things in front of Congress. So Beyond Plastics gets a platform because they're an NGO and they're seen to be virtuous, but they're not, because they're just saying things that don't stand up to scrutiny. Whereas the head of the biggest plastics association got up and said, hey, we employ a lot of people, leave us alone. And that's just a terrible argument. The argument is that we're the greenest, cheapest solution, not that we employ people. And there's all kinds of industries that employ people. Drug dealing employs people, but it doesn't make it a great plan, right? So this is how lame our plastics trade associations are for the most part. They're hugely funded and haven't been bothered to do anything or to even learn the basics.
Yeah, I can see how that's difficult for them. And frankly, maybe this is not something that they focused on in the past. They were material scientists and engineers, and now they're confronted with a different challenge that's probably taking them off guard to some extent and probably could use some help in that direction.
The two ones I've seen are the plastic industry, the Plastic Pipe Institute and the PVC Pipe Association. Those are the most effective ones I've seen at really getting the facts and taking the fight.
That's right. And before we go, is there anything in the future in terms of trends in plastic and in the infrastructure space? Is there sometimes when we think about sustainability and technology, there's always this idea that maybe something around the corner is there that's going to change the industry or get us out of a situation, or there's bioresins and things like this. Is there anything coming around the corner that you could see that's going to be impactful here in the plastics industry?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that really do make sense. So bioplastics are usually, the degradable ones are usually worse for the environment and cost more money. So I don't see those as a future. There's a market there and people are falling for this nonsense, but by and large, they don't make sense. What does make sense is in the future, we'll be buying plastics made of plants, plant-based feedstocks rather than fossil fuel. And what the regular member of public doesn't understand right now is that polyethylene, polypropylene, some of these other common plastics that we use now can be made identically from plant-based oils. So we don't need fossil fuels to make these materials. And those will be a green alternative in the future when fossil fuel is more at a premium. So there is a way out of this thing. And the other thing is, people assume that degradation is a good idea. life cycle studies show the opposite, right? The last thing you want to do is convert something durable into something less durable. The last thing you want to do is convert solids into carbon dioxide, which is global warming. So the best thing to do is to make things which are more durable. And the way to do that is to use better stabilizers, which are additives used in tiny amounts in plastics where there's big room for improvement to make things more durable, last longer, and therefore be greener.
Yeah, but certainly that's a consideration within the infrastructure space where you can have a product that's going to maybe last for 25 to 50 years, or you can consider something that maybe is up to 100 years plus, right?
And exactly.
Any product that's 100 years plus, you're going to reduce the environmental footprint significantly. But correct. Look, Chris, thank you again.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. This has been very good and I can't wait to see you in the future.
Yeah, this is what the book looks like if anyone's looking for it. And thank you very much for the opportunity to share the science. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Building Connections. You can find links to all of the resources mentioned in today's episode in the show notes. If you're finding value in our podcast, please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us connect with more listeners like you. Don't miss out on future episodes. Keep listening and building connections with us.